Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 6:46 Irish Summertime. Today is September 26th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Well, this has been quite a week in which we have seen the beginning of the week starting out with remarkable optimism about a deal being done whereby a rescue package was being put together which would support the financial markets. And the rest of the week has been characterized by a hiatus, really, in terms of what's been happening in stock markets, because we have been down almost every day, but not really by very much. Yesterday had a bit of a recovery, and today we see Wall Street had traded down over 2% earlier on today, but has rallied from those lows, which is quite positive. We also have President Bush saying that Congress will overcome their differences and pass a substantial bailout package. So, we're still very much in uncertain territory. The news that there was going to be a bailout was welcomed by markets, and we saw fantastic rallies on the upside for the vast majority of stock markets, particularly in those markets which had the worst crisis in terms of their financial sectors. And of course, we've also had a number of these banks' shares no longer being allowed to be shorted. And that's in a whole range of different countries, and it's rather random. But certainly in the US, the UK, Australia, and a couple of other European countries, and some of the countries in Asia. Interestingly enough, China today announced that it was going to allow shorting in its market. It was banned a number of years ago because it was unregulated and there was a certain amount of market manipulation going on, but they've allowed shorting once more in their market, probably in anticipation of bringing in index futures sometime later this year or early next year. They are not anticipating that allowing short positions in the A share market is going to have a negative effect on the stock market, and they probably wouldn't have done it unless they were pretty sure that was the case. Of course, we also had this week that the Chinese Sovereign Wealth Fund started buying the four biggest banks in China and has helped to spark a rally there. Also, the brokers in China are doing reasonably well following that news. So, what we've also started to see is banks starting to cut interest rates. We had Taiwan cutting interest rates this week, but we've also had China cutting interest rates and Australia and New Zealand, and it does look like now it is only a matter of time before we see a concerted effort by the major central banks of the world to cut interest rates and help support markets. The type of activity that we're seeing here is very scary, and the package that is being put together needs to be all encompassing, excuse me, in terms of the assets that it is capable of dealing with, and it needs to help to restore confidence in the banking sector. Investors rightfully feel righteous indignation about the way that they have been treated, and the fact that, I can't remember who said this, but it was that banks provide you with an umbrella when it's not raining and take it back when it is, that they are universally looking after for their own welfare, and the largesse that was given to them by their regulators has certainly paid off for the executives in those companies who took huge bonuses home, but certainly didn't pay off for us in terms of the state that they have left the banking sector in and the global economy generally. US GDP growth came out today a bit lower than was expected, but it's still around 2 point something%. So, slowing GDP growth in the US, and there are still great fears that we're going to have a recession there. And there are recessions already in some of these European countries like Ireland and Spain, and certainly going that way in the UK. However, the growth cent these were never the growth centers of the well, that's not true. They were the growth centers of the world for quite a long time, but that hasn't been the case for about the last 10 years. The growth center of the world right now is in Asia, and yes, we do have slowing economic growth in China and to a certain extent in India, but nowhere near to the same extent as we have in Western Europe and the US, or more or less the English-speaking world. So, That is certainly something that we need to be aware of, because while certain parts of those economies depend upon the rest of the world for their exports, they are making great strides in generating demand from their own internal economies. And of course, not only is Asia the GDP growth center of the world, it's also the population center of the world. And the pace at which people are entering the middle classes is quite unprecedented in human history, as is the massive urbanization that is going on and has been going on for the last 20 years and is due to continue. So that does require one to take into account those types of secular changes when one is making long-term opinions or forming long-term opinions about the way the world will look 10, 15 years from now and try to invest accordingly. GDP growth across Asia is helping to lift vast numbers of people out of poverty. And as they start to spend more and generate vast sums of money for the consumer economy, they will help to also generate further growth in those economies. That will necessitate a lot more demand for basic commodities such as food, water, metals, oil, and just about everything else that we take for granted. And that is a secular theme. What we've seen over the last 6 months or so is that we've had a massive global deleveraging. Over the last 20 years, we've had a bond bull market. And that bond bull market saw bond prices getting up to highs, which are unreasonable. We have a massive supply of bonds. There's certainly no shortage of them out there. And yields have fallen considerably over the last 20 odd years. Well, the 10-year yield hit a bottom back in 2003, and it certainly tested that low over the last year or so, but hasn't quite made it yet. This credit crisis has certainly lengthened the credit cycle, and it probably looks or it suggests that we're going to get a long basing phase with yields going sideways for a sustained period of time. But the period that we've gone through over the last 20 years, where inflationary fears were coming down and GDP growth was picking up, and we've been through a period over the last 6 or 7 years where we've had a synchronized global GDP expansion, that's largely ended now. Inflation is going to be much more of a problem because of the demand for commodities from the emerging world. The deflation that was being exported in terms of the price of goods coming from China is probably also in the latter stages, because they are moving up the value tree, or the value pyramid, whichever way you want to call it, and they are trying to retool their economy to produce higher value items. And there is also the fact that commodity prices are also feeding through into the price of generating just about everything. So we are in a new inflationary cycle. However, we are currently in a disinflationary part of that long-term cycle. And let me be a little bit clearer about that. We can't expect inflation to go up in a straight line all of the time. And we've just been through a period where inflation was very much a problem, and it coincided with big fears about the impact of inflation on the global economy. It coincided with surging commodity prices, especially oil prices, and that was followed by the gold price and precious metals. But we've also seen now that inflationary fear is probably no longer justified in the very short to medium term, while we do remain in a long-term inflationary cycle over the long term. Because right now we're in a period where deflation is certainly the order of the day, and certainly is where we're getting the most fear in terms of how investors are treating the global economy and how they're investing their money. But central bankers are much more frightened of deflation because they see the example that's been put down by the Japanese, and they will do everything they can to try and avoid that same fate, excuse me, for their own economies. So they will veer on the side of inflation. And whatever bailout package is put through by Congress over the coming days will certainly be also adding vast sums of money to the national debt in the USA, and no one ever anticipates paying down that debt with dollars worth what they are today. They'll inflate their way out of the problem. And that is a cycle that is secular in nature. Given that, we have gold prices having had one of their biggest rallies ever since the middle of September, and they found support around the 750 level. It's unlikely, given the size of that upward dynamic, that we're going to see gold falling very much further in here right now. We would have to have a number of conditions coming through, with a surging US dollar being one of them, and a significant outperformance of other sectors, and we're certainly not seeing that in here right now. But because gold also had such a big move on the upside, and we are now in a medium-term correction, it's unlikely that we're going to see gold pushing back above $1,000 in any time this year, or probably maybe not even next year. It has gone through periods where it has had very big medium-term corrections or medium-term consolidations within its overall trend. And gold's trend does remain really quite consistent. It has had these big consolidations and then pushes on the upside and more big consolidations, and that is still the pattern that we see. Platinum and silver are not like that right now. They are far more volatile, and as a result, it is more uncertain about whether they're going to take out the recent lows that we've seen them put in. However, as I've been saying all week, if gold can sustain its move above 750 and capitalize upon that move and sustain a move back above $900 and range around that area, well then, in that case, silver and platinum are looking very, very cheap indeed. And it will not take very much time before investors start to put their money back in there, and those metals could easily move back into a period of outperformance relative to gold. I was also looking at one of my favorite charts for long-term perspective today, and that is the ratio of gold to the Dow Jones. Because gold, or put it the other way, the Dow peaked against gold back in 1999 and has given up more than half of its advance relative to gold in the preceding bull market. We've had three peaks like this in the last 100 years. The first one was in 1929, the second one was around 1967, 68, and the last one was in 1999. Every time we've seen these peaks, gold has fallen back into a base. Sorry, the Dow has fallen back into a base relative to gold in the subsequent 10 or 15 years. And it has already fallen considerably relative to the performance of gold over the last 5 or 6 years. By the way, you will find this chart in the chart library. But it also indicates that gold has significantly further to go in terms of its outperformance relative to the Dow Jones. That can happen in a number of different ways, but the most likely way is that we're going to see gold pushing upwards to new high ground. The reason I say that is because the other way would be that the Dow pushes down and makes significant new lows. But if that were to occur, then we would also have massive intervention by the authorities to support the Dow Jones. So I don't see it falling in a cataclysmic fashion, which would quickly bring gold's performance relative to that index to a peak. I think there is much greater chance that we're going to see gold prices push up over the long term, and we still have a number of years left before we can expect a peak of importance for the gold price. But what we are in a period of now is in a secular period where valuations are contracting. And those are also secular themes where we have PE ratios contracting and rising dividend yields. And that's primarily applied to Wall Street, that we've certainly gone through a period like that in here right now. And this is also a secular theme because we've gone through a period where earnings have been remarkably high in terms of their historic performance, and they're moving back towards a mean. Right now, we still have extremely high expectations for earnings next year, and they will gradually be revised down. I don't believe that we see those earnings expectations in the actual price of indices in here at the moment. But certainly, the re-rating of those earnings expectations is likely to give us further volatility in the coming 6 to 12 months. What we can anticipate is that over time, the P ratios will continue to come back towards their mean levels and dividend yields will rise. But because we're in a disinflationary cycle in here at the moment, then those dividend yields are unlikely to rise very significantly beyond where they are right now. At least that's my perception. I will post some of those charts, I think, in comment of the day next year because, or sorry, next week, because they're certainly useful for review. Looking at the way we can expect equity markets to perform over the coming months and even years, well, they've gone through periods where we've seen the majority of stock markets being in an uptrend for 4 to 5 years, and all of those uptrends have now broken. It's too early to say that we've seen a low, which we could call the low for this move, because there is still the possibility that these markets could push back down below those mid-September lows and reassert their downtrends. We won't be able to say that they've found lows of importance until they break their progression of lower highs. What we can say in the very short term is that there has been a climactic ending, which has resulted in a number of markets rallying significantly. So that is a low for the short to the, well, the near term. Over the medium term, they need to break those progression of lower highs. Given the technical damage done to those uptrends, well, those uptrends have ended, and we have seen markets fall, some of them upwards of 20 to 30%, some of them more than that. It does mean that the recovery is going to take time. And that does mean that we will have to scale back our expectations for equity performance or equity index performance, particularly in the Western world, over the coming year, because it will take time for investors to have renewed confidence, and there are still a number of questions that need to be answered with relation to the financial sector and their potential impact on what is happening over their balance sheets and how they intend to deal with those problems. So, looking out at the long term, we can anticipate that equity markets will recover. It is beyond question that this big move on the downside will produce good buying opportunities for patient long-term investors. That certainly doesn't mean that you should be running out and buying large quantities of stock in here right now, but it is certainly something that we need to be aware of as we look at how markets will eventually form their bottom. For government bond prices, I think that they are ridiculously expensive in here, and government bond yields are very low. But the prognosis, I think, for the medium to longer term is further ranging with a downward bias for prices and upwards for yields over that very long term. Commodity prices remain in a medium-term correction, but it is a correction rather than a reversal for the vast majority of them, and they are likely to push back upwards to new high ground as this medium-term correction ends, but again, that could take time. With the dollar, all of this money printing, and this is by far the largest episode of money printing in a period over the last 20 years where we've seen rather a lot of it happening. Well, you can't keep printing money and expect it to be worth more. Yes, the credit being squeezed out of the market at the moment is deflationary, but we are now being s they're sowing the seeds of the next inflationary cycle. And with the amount of money that is being pumped into the system, that will eventually have an inflationary effect, although in the very short term, deflation is where the major fears are, which is also sparking so much of that liquidity being pumped in. But of course, no country wants a particularly strong currency, but some of them want a weaker currency more than others. And that does mean that all countries are pursuing the same type of policy. The Asian economies have allowed their currencies to appreciate considerably over the last 4 or 5 years, and they have taken a pause from doing that over the last 6 months or so, and it will take time before we see those Asian currencies starting to appreciate relative to the rest of the sort of the G7 countries' currencies, I think. What we can anticipate that over the long term, that GDP growth and the flood of money that will continue to go towards the Asian region will help to support those currencies over the long term. Also, the commodity currencies, while a little bit weaker over the last 6 months or so, they have massive surpluses coming into those countries, and there is very good reason that they should have strong currencies, particularly in a commodity super cycle. And that's pretty much it for me, but I hope you have a great evening and well, a great weekend, and I think David will be back on Monday, so he'll be doing the audios. Thank you very much for your time.